Micah Clarke by Arthur Conan Doyle. Dramatized in 5 parts by Constance Cox. With Martin Reed as Micah, Patrick Troughton as Decimus Saxon, and James Bryce as Reuben Lockerbie. Micah Clarke, Part 5, The End of It All.
My heart was indeed heavy as I rode away from the west. Our defeat at the hands of the soldiers of King James at Sedgemoor had made me a rebel, homeless, and without a future. All that seemed possible was for me to make my way to the coast, where if I was fortunate enough to elude capture, I might make my way abroad and become, perhaps, like Saxon, a soldier of fortune. It was now going on for midday, and I was beginning to feel very hungry, for I'd tasted nothing since the evening before. But the bleak landscape seemed to offer no possibility of finding food, until at last, when I'd almost given up hope, I saw a windmill standing upon a hill at the other side of some fields. Judging from its appearance, it had escaped the general pillage, and I took the pathway which branched away to it from the highway. At the base of the mill, there stood a shed, which was evidently used to stall the horses which brought the farmer's grain. Some grass was heaped up inside it, so I loosened Covenant's girth and left him to have a hearty meal. The mill itself appeared to be silent and deserted. I climbed the steep wooden ladder and pushed the door open. All around the walls were sacks full of flour, while in the fireplace was a pile of wood ready for lighting. With the aid of my tinderbox, I soon had a cheerful blaze going. Then, taking a handful of flour from the nearest stack, I moistened it with water from a pitcher, making it into a flat dough cake, though smiling the while to think what my mother would have said to such rough cookery.
What in heaven? Who's that? Where are you? If you're in one of these sacks, I'll soon prick you out. Show yourself before I run my sword through you.
Oh, holy mother of God, help me, I'm dying. I must come out.
The lid of a great chest on which I'd been sitting was slowly pushed up, and a creature wholly coated and caked with flour rose slowly from it. Stooping down, I dragged the man from his hiding place, when he dropped upon his knees upon the floor and yelled for mercy, raising such a cloud of dust from every wriggle of his body that I began to cough and to sneeze. As the skin of powder began to scale off from him, I saw to my surprise that he was no miller or peasant, but was a man at arms, with a huge sword girt to his side, looking at present not unlike a frosted icicle.
By heaven! You're a soldier!
Not a soldier, your worship, but a poor scrivener, driven into these courses by the tyranny of those above him. A more loyal man, your grace, never wore leather. But when the mayor says yes, can the clerk say no? Oh, spare me, your lordship. Spare a penitent wretch whose only prayer is that he may be allowed to serve King James to the last drop of his blood.
Do you renounce the Duke of Monmouth?
Oh, I do, your highness, with all my heart.
Then prepare to die. I am one of his officers.
Oh, no, no, your worship. I follow the Duke. I fought for him. I'm loyal, your grace. Loyal to the death.
So it would seem. Up off your knees, man. I know you now. You're Master Tetheridge, clerk to the Mayor of Taunton.
You know me?
As you know me. I'm Captain Clarke, the Saxon's regiment of foot.
Why, to be sure, Captain, I remember. Oh, Captain, I'm so glad to see you've come off scatheless.
But not at the expense of renouncing my allegiance.
Nay, Captain, that I never did. I'm as true and leal a man as I ever was.
That I can fully believe.
All I did was to simulate. I practiced the cunning of the serpent, which should in every soldier accompany the courage of the lion. Oh, I fancy your cake is done, Captain.
Are you hungry?
Oh, Captain.
There is half of it.
Oh, Captain, thank you. Thank you.
How did you come to be in the flour bin?
Oh. Why, Captain, it was in this wise. When the fight was lost and I cut and hacked till my arm was weary and my sword blunted,
I found that I alone was left alive of all the Taunton men.
Hmm? How came that? Were you hiding behind a bush?
Oh, that's unworthy of you, Captain. Our good mare, were he alive to say it, would tell you I stood within a ring of slain I'd cut down with my sword arm.
The mare is dead, then?
Yes.
Alack. Poor little Mistress Ruth.
The mare, as I say, being dead, had no further need of his horse. So I rode slowly from the field until I found this place.
God of mercy, what's that?
It's my horse in the stall below.
Oh, heavenly thanks. I thought it was the dragoons.
But of course you and I would have gone forth and smitten them.
Or hid in the flour bin.
I've not yet made it clear to you how I came to be there.
It's clear enough.
Well, hearing you come up the ladder, I retreated into ambush.
Ah, the flour bin.
From which I meant to make a sudden onfall upon you, had the flour not choked my breathing. Which is fortunate, as it happens. I might have done you an injury.
All very clear and explicit, Master Tetheridge. My king's troops will be busy with the Bridgewater ale tonight. If we can pass through, my friends on the north coast who give us a lift in their lugger as far as Holland.
Us? What? You mean I may go with you?
I'll help you that far, since you're my fellow in misfortune. But now I think we should rest. We may have to travel far tonight.
There's a pile of empty sacks in the loft above. You sleep there. I'll stay down here for a while and bake another dough cake for us to take with us.
Well, you take the watch for 2 hours. Then come and wake me. Then I'll keep guard while you sleep.
I shall be true to my post, Captain.
I climbed up into the loft, and throwing myself upon the rude couch, was soon in a deep and dreamless slumber, lulled by the low, mournful groaning and creaking of the sails. I was awoken by steps beside me, and found that the little clerk had come up the ladder and was bending over me. I asked him if the time had come for me to rouse, on which he answered in a strange, quivering voice that I had yet an hour, and that he'd come up to see if there was any service which he could render me. I was too weary to take much note of his slinking manner and pallid cheeks, so thanking him for his attention, I turned over and was soon asleep once more. My next waking was a rougher and sterner one.
There he is! Take him in!
A dozen redcoats were swarming into the room. I sprang to my feet and felt for my sword, but it had gone. Unarmed and taken at advantage, I was struck down and pinioned in a moment.
Struggle, man, and we'll blow your brains out. Truss him up and take him down below. Bring that sword with you.
I was bound so tightly with a coil of rope that Samson himself could scarcely have got free. Then I was dragged down the ladder to the room below, which was also crowded with troopers. In one corner was Tetheridge, a picture of abject terror, only prevented from falling to the floor by a stalwart corporal. In front of him stood two officers. One had my sword in his hand. He examined the blade curiously, then looked up and addressed me.
This is a good piece of steel. How came you by this sword, fellow?
It was my father's.
And then I hope he put it to a better use than his son has done.
To as good, though not to a better. That sword has always been drawn for the rights of Englishmen against the tyranny of kings.
What a tag for the playhouse, ain't it? Delivered by Betterton, close up to the footlights with a hand on his heart, and I warrant the pit would rise to it.
Very like, but we've not time for speeches now. What shall we do with the informer?
Hang him!
Oh, no! No, your most gracious honors! Didn't I tell you where you could find one of the stoutest soldiers in the rebel army? Didn't I lead you to him? Didn't I even creep up and remove his sword so he couldn't harm him? You can't treat me so scurvily when I've given him over to you. You must let me go!
Very well delivered. Plaguily so. The emphasis was just right and the enunciation clear. We might use this fellow on the board stick.
We've other business than play acting now.
What this reptile says is true. We must keep faith with him if we wish the other country folk to give up their fugitives.
I say, hang him first and discuss the questions after.
No, he must have his freedom.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.
Take him outside, Corporal. Strip off his breastplate and send him across the moor with a touch of your stirrup leather across his shoulders.
Willingly, sir. Come on, you.
No, this isn't just, sir. I helped you. I don't deserve chastisement. Officer, officer, there are other ways I can spare you. No.
Oh, Corporal Rivers has certainly taken us at our word. That fellow will have to sleep on his side for a month. Now for the other. Yeah, that stout beam over our heads should serve our purpose, and we've rope enough. Mm-hmm. Where's Hangman Broderick?
Here, sir. I have the rope here, with the noose.
All right, throw it over the beam, then. String the fellow up, Corporal.
No, no, wait. We must do our work with order. The colonel will need some details. What's your name, fellow?
Captain Micah Clark.
Aha. This is the very man. I had a feeling it might be so. They said he was a huge fellow.
Have you ever known a Major Ogilvy of the Horse Guards Blue?
Ogilvy? Well, since he shared food and quarters with me ever since I took him prisoner, I think I may fairly say I do know him.
Cast loose the cord, Broderick. Young man, you must surely be preserved for something great. You'll never be nearer your grave till you actually step into it. Major Ogilvy has given orders that should you be taken, you're to be brought in unscathed.
Does that mean I'm free to go?
Oh. Good Lord, no. You're a rebel man. You'll stand your trial with the rest of them.
And I'd rather share the fate of my comrades in arms.
You're ungrateful, my friend. Still, you'll die one way or the other. Sergeant Greta!
Sir!
Take two troopers and conduct the prisoner to Comet's Church. We've other work to do here.
At the word of command, the troopers descended into the field where their horses were picketed and were speedily on the march once more, the tall captain leading them and the stage-struck cornet bringing up the rear. The sergeant to whose care I'd been committed, a great square-shouldered, dark-browed man, ordered Covenant to be brought out and helped me to mount him. He removed the pistols from the holsters, however, and hung them with my sword at his own saddle bow.
You promise to be quiet, we'll free your arms, so you can ride more easily.
I've no desire to escape, Sergeant.
Good. Untie him.
Sergeant?
I admire a brave man in misfortune. Now ride between us, and stand true to your word, because I promise you our pistols are primed.
How did you discover me?
Your comrade played you a scurvy trick. We were riding down the road when he ran out of the mill and said he'd deliver one of Monmouth's stoutest soldiers into our hands, on condition that his own life should be spared. For me, I just strung him up out of hand.
That's my own fault for trusting him. The captain said we were to be brought to trial.
Aye. They say there's a lawyer coming from London, whose wig is more to be feared than our helmets. It said he'll slay more men in a day than a troop of horse in a 10-mile chase. Oh, speaking for myself, I should be glad when they take this butcher's work into their own hands. See those bodies on yonder tree?
Huh?
It's an evil season when such acorns grow on English oaks.
It's an evil season when men who call themselves Christians inflict such vengeance on poor, simple peasants. It's fair the leaders and officers should suffer, but not poor godly country folk.
I say, let a man keep his religion in his heart, that we may all live at peace with one another. Turn off this road here.
Sergeant, may I ask you a favor?
Well, that's as may be.
My horse, my true and brave Covenant. I know he must be taken away from me. Will you take charge of him? No, I'll pay you for his keep. And if I should fail to reclaim him, will you keep him for your own use and treat him kindly?
That I will, lad. Give him your word. God forbid I should ever misuse any animal. I trust one day I'll be able to hand it back to you.
I was lodged for one night at Gummidge Church. On Thursday morning, the third day after the battle, we were all conveyed into Bridgewater, where we were confined for the remainder of the week in St. Mary's Church. the very one from the tower of which Monmouth and his commanders had inspected the enemy's position.
I see Captain Clark. Is he here?
Oh, it could be, sir. They're all just faces to me. Hey there. Is there a Captain Clark among you? Is someone asking for you?
Here. Who wants me? Major Ogilvy. This is kind of you to come and see me.
I wish it were not in such conditions. I was better treated as a prisoner than you are.
I owe you my life. That I wasn't hanged when I was caught is entirely due to you. How is Reuben?
Almost back to health. And a great comfort to Mistress Ruth, his little sweetheart. I hear the brave mare was killed at Sedgemoor.
Aye. Will Reuben be in danger? He took no active part in the rebellion.
I think not. The king will have victims enough. And what influence I have, I'll use for him. And indeed for you. You've heard Monmouth has been taken.
Oh, no. No. Poor man.
Yeah. He was found hiding in a bean field not far from the New Forest.
What an end for him. He'll die, of course.
That's inevitable. The king will have his head for it.
Was he found alone?
Totally.
So he was deserted as he deserted us.
These are dreadful conditions for you, Captain. Is there anything I can do for your comfort? I could speak to your guards.
No, no. These men were my comrades in arms. I wouldn't wish to be treated differently. But there are two things you could do for me.
Tell me.
Would you write to my father? Tell him I'm in no pressing danger. And give him and my mother my dearest love.
Gladly.
He is Joseph Clark, tanner, of Havant in Hampshire.
A letter shall go today. And your other request?
Oh, I have some money here. My mother sewed it in my collar very prudently. These poor fellows round me, most of them are destitute. Some badly wounded. Mm. Could you buy some better food for them and perhaps some medicines? Well, I know in many cases there's little that can be done, but it may be possible to alleviate their sufferings a little.
Depend on me, Captain Clark. If I had my way, these poor fellows would be allowed to go home. But I fear most of them would pay the ultimate penalty.
I must ask you to leave now, sir.
Yes, 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 I'm going. Goodbye, Captain. Farewell. Be of good heart, and God be with you.
Major Ogilvy was true to his word, and with his aid, I was able to distribute a few small comforts to my fellow prisoners. Then, early in August, we were taken from Bridgewater to Taunton, where we were lodged with hundreds of others in the same wool storehouse that had quartered our regiment in the early days of the campaign. Here we waited to learn what was to become of us. 3 days later, on a Monday evening, Lord Chief Justice Jeffreys, Baron of Wem, drove into Taunton. His infamous reputation had preceded him, and we crowded to the windows to watch him pass. First rode the dragoons with their standards and kettle drums, then the javelin men with their halberds, and last of all, drawn by 6 long-tailed Flemish mares, came a great open coach, thickly encrusted with gold. Inside, wrapped in a cloak of crimson velvet and reclining on cushions, sat the most feared man in England. Stories of his furious rages and wholesale condemnation of prisoners at his travesties of trials had reached us. But as I looked at him, I found them difficult to believe. He was quite the handsomest man I'd ever seen, with a noble and lofty expression, magnificent black eyes, and a clear olive skin. Yet before very long, I and my fellow prisoners were to discover that the stories were indeed true, and that justice was indeed blind where Baron Jeffreys was concerned. That very night, a great gallows was erected outside the White Horse Inn. And the next morning, one by one, my fellow prisoners were called out, the more prominent being chosen first. We saw and heard no more of them, save that a sudden fierce rattle of drums would rise up now and again to drown any dying words that might fall from the sufferers. On the eighth day of the assizes, along with the last 50 of the prisoners, I was called to the courthouse.
The court will rise for the Lord Chief Justice.
Well, gentlemen of the jury, again we have much work for you. In the past week you have rightly sent 1,100 of the king's enemies to the gallows. I have no doubt this pretty bunch. How many are there, Clark?
50, your worship.
This pretty bunch of 50 will soon follow them. Was ever so much wickedness fitted into one courtroom before? Who ever saw such an array of villainous faces? Ah, rogues, I see a rope ready for every one of you. You gray-haired rascal in the corner. How comes it you've got more of the grace of God in you than to take up arms against your most gracious and loving sovereign?
I follow the dictates of my conscience, my lord.
Your conscience? A ranter with a conscience, gentlemen. Your conscience will stand you in little stead when you're dancing on nothing with a rope around your neck.
My lord.
And you great hulking rebel. Haven't you grace enough to cast down your eyes, but must needs look justice in the face as though you were an honest man? Aren't you afraid, sirrah? Don't you see death close upon you?
I've seen death before now, sir. I was not afraid.
Generation of vipers! To rebel against the kindest of kings, the best of fathers. But wayward children must, with all kindness, be flogged into obedience. The king will save your natural parents all further care on your account. Who defends these villains?
I defend the prisoners, your lordship.
Master Helstrop again, is it? You're in all these dirty cases, Master Helstrop. You might find yourself in a parlous condition, Master Helstrop. I think sometimes that I see you yourself in the dock, Master Helstrop. I think you should have a care, sir. Have a care.
My brief is from the crown, your lordship. His majesty has appointed me for the prisoner's defense.
Must I be answered back, then? Am I to be insulted in my own court?
My lord, I...
Give every five-throat piece of a pleader because he chanced to have a wig and gown to browbeat the Lord Chief Justice and fly in the face of the ruling of the court? Oh, Master Hillstrop, I fear I shall live to see some evil come upon you.
I crave your lordship's pardon.
I warn you, sirrah. Keep a guard upon your words and actions. See you're not too zealous in the cause of this scum of the earth. How now, then? What do these 50 villains desire to say for themselves? What is their lie? A gentleman of the jury, I beg you will take particular notice of the cutthroat faces of these men. It is well we have a sufficient guard, for neither justice nor the church is safe in their hands. Well, speak, Master Helstrop.
40 of the prisoners plead guilty to taking up arms against the king, my lord.
They could hardly do less. Is that great hulking fellow amongst them?
If you mean me, my lord, yes. I plead guilty to taking up arms in a rightful cause.
Brazen effrontery! Was there ever such unparalleled impudence? You express repentance for this sin against the most kind and long-suffering monarch.
It was not a sin, in my view, your lordship.
We may alter your view before very long, sirrah. And the rest of the 40 rogues.
They have refused to express repentance, my lord.
All parasites. All hardened villains. Put the forte on this side of the enclosure. Now, Master Hillstrop, these other ten, they plead not guilty, do they?
Yes, your lordship.
And they expect us to believe this transparent falsehood, this palpable device. How dare they foist it upon the court?
My lord, the defense has not yet been advanced.
I can smell a lie before it is uttered. I can read it as quick as you can think. Well, come then. The court's time is precious. Put forward a defense, or sit down and let judgment be passed.
These 10 men, your lordship.
10 devils, you mean?
They're innocent peasants, my lord, who love God and king.
Ha!
They came, my lord. They had nothing to do with the rebellion.
Then why are they here, pray?
They came, your lordship. They were dragged from their homes, not because of any suspicion against them, but because they could not satisfy the greed of certain soldiers who were balked of plunder.
Master Hillstrop, you are indeed in danger. Not content with bolstering up rebels, you now go out of your way to slander the king's troops.
I merely state the prisoner's defense, my lord.
And what, Master Hillstrop, is the defense of these rogues?
An alibi, your lordship.
Ah, the common plea of every scoundrel. Have they witnesses?
I have a list of 40 witnesses, my lord. They're waiting below. Many of them have come great distances with great toil and trouble.
Who are they? What are they?
Cottagers and farmers, your lordship. The neighbors of these poor men who knew them well and can speak as to their doings.
Cottagers and farmers. Why, they are drawn from the very class from which these men come. Would you have us believe the oaths of the pothouse companions of the men we're trying? I warrant they've arranged it all snugly over their beer, the prick-eared rogues.
Will you not hear the witnesses, my lord?
Not a word from them, sir. Silence, you fellows!
But your lordship,
it is rather a question as to whether my duty towards the king does not warrant me placing all your witnesses in the dock as aiders and abettors of treason.
My lord!
Yes! Sit down, Master Hillstrop. We wish to hear no more subversive statements from you.
I have done, my lord.
Ah, wisdom has come to you at last, Master Hillstrop. Not before time, sir. Not before time. It is therefore our opinion that the jury at once be required to pronounce a single verdict upon the whole of the prisoners. Unless you wish to retire, gentlemen.
No, your lordship.
No. Quite unnecessary, I agree. And your verdict?
Guilty, my lord.
Oh. Of course. Guilty as Judas Iscariot. Move them a little forward, Usher, so I may see them to more advantage. Ah, you cunning one. Where are your plots and schemes now, eh? Where is your chosen king? Where now can you fly to? Are you not afraid? You may well be. We shall give you very short shrift. Silence! You shall have time to pray hereafter when I have pronounced sentence upon you. Had I my way, every one of you should swing to your crimes. Not only you, but some of those whose stomachs are too nice for this work and who profess to serve the king while they intercede for his enemies. But the king, that great-hearted and compassionate monarch, has had pity upon you. Aye, pity. Has that not made you loathe yourselves, you who stuck against him? At his command, we withhold from you the death you have so well merited. Now, pray. Aye, drop on your knees and give thanks when I tell you he has ordained. You shall all have a free pardon. Aye, you may will be astonished, you traitors and rebels who so little deserve clemency, at the mercy of your king. This pardon, however, is coupled with certain conditions and limitations. You will be removed from here in chains to Thule, where a ship will be awaiting you. From thence, you will be transported to the plantations to be sold as slaves. God send you masters who know the use of chastisement. Soften your stubborn thoughts and incline your minds to better things. Keep that rebel quiet! No doubt, dogs and vermin. You think by the plantations I mean His Majesty's American dominions. Unhappily, there are too many of your breed in that part already. You might fall among friends who might strengthen you in your evil courses. No, by the plantation, I mean Barbados and the Indians, where you shall live with other slaves whose skins may be darker than yours, but I warrant whose souls are whiter. Take them away!
Our travesty of a trial was ended, and we were led back to our prison. 3 days after the trial, we had been marched to Poole, where we now found a broad-decked, heavy-sparred brig awaiting us. The captain stood in the poop, checking us off by means of a list, and as he looked at the sturdy build and rustic health of the peasants, which even confinement had not been able to break down, he rubbed his hands together with delight.
Storm safe, Jem, storm safe. There's lodgings fit for Duchess down there, stab me. Pack 'em away. Never seen a better lot, never. Not in 40 years of trading. What say you, Jem?
Another rebellion, Captain, and we'll be set up for life.
One by one, we passed down the steep ladder which led to the hold, where stalls on either side had been prepared for us. As each man came opposite the one set aside for him, he was thrown into it and fastened down with anklets of iron. It was dark before we were all secured, but the captain came round with a lantern to satisfy himself that all his property was quite secure.
Have you served out the butter, Jem? Have you seen them at their rations?
They've all had a rye bread loaf and a pint of water, Captain.
Oh, fit for Duchess, swap me. Hey, look at this one, Jem. Mm? There's a lusty rogue for you.
Oh, aye.
Look at his great hands. He'll work for years in the rice swamps before the land crabs have the picking of him.
You've done well, Captain.
Yay. What's this? Here's one who hasn't touched his food. Mm. What, the plague filler? Are you too nice in the stomach to eat what your betters have eaten before you?
I got no heart for food, sir.
Oh, you must have whims and fancies, must you? I tell you, fella, you're mine, body and soul. I pay good money for you, and when I say eat, you eat. No. Refuse your food, and I'll have you flogged at the yardarm.
Try to eat, Zeph. We're all in the same plight.
Here's another who ain't grateful to us for getting him out of that stinking prison. Not a bit of spirit in him.
What ails you, fella? If you got jail fever, I'll have you tossed over the side. Take my word for it.
I'm not ill, sir. I just keep thinking of the poor old mother at Wellington. I'm wondering who's going to keep her now I'm gone.
Well, you should have thought of that before you set yourself up against your king and country. You're supposed to arrive at your journey's end looking sound and hearty, not like a sick fowl on a perch. Give him a touch of the rope then, Jim, if you find him threatened. That'll give him something to mope for. Hey, where you got to?
The second you score me, Captain. He says there's a stranger come aboard, wanting to speak to you.
What manner of man?
Second said he looked like a person of quality. The boatswain had to jog against him, and he swore so soundly at him and glared at him with eyes like a tiger cat that he thought he was the devil himself.
The plague take him. Go on, Dick, Jim. Tell him I'm counting my livestock. I'll be with him anon.
He said he must see you this instant, Captain. He said there'd be trouble if you didn't.
Who the hell can he be? What's the rogue mean ordering me about on my own ship? I'll let him know who's lord of the quarterdeck.
Now we were left alone, I looked more closely about me. A single oil lamp, swinging from a beam, was the only light we were given. And by its yellow, murky glimmer, I could see the great wooden ribs of the vessel arching up on either side. A stench from the bilge water poisoned the close, heavy air. And every now and then, a rat would dart across the little zone of light and vanish into the gloom at the farther side. I lay awake for a long time, full of thought both for myself and the poor souls around me. At last, however, the measured swash of the water against the side of the vessel and the slight rise and fall lulled me into sleep.
Wake up, will you? Wake up, I say. Sit up. Stick those great legs of yours out in front of you. I'm going to take your irons off. All right. Now, stand up and follow me.
As quickly as my cramped limbs would allow, I followed the mate up the ladder and onto the deck. It was heavenly to come into the pure air once more. The stars were shining brightly overhead, and a fresh breeze blew from the shore and hummed a pleasant tune in the rigging. Close beside us, the lights of the town gleamed yellow and cheery.
Hurry yourself, will you? You ain't brought up here to admire the view. And I warn you, if you're thinking of leaping over the side, I've got my pistols cocked. This way, aft, to the captain's cabin.
Still following the mate, I found myself in the long, low cabin of the brig. At the farther end sat the captain, his face shining with greed and expectation. Standing beside him was a tall man, wrapped in a long black cloak, with his hat pulled down close over his eyes.
All right, Jem, you can leave us.
My compliments to you, Captain Clark. Seems we're not to be shipmates on this voyage after all. There's been a change of plans for you.
What change? What plans? Where am I to go?
Captain Micah Clark must do a voyage of his own instead.
Saxon? Saxon, is it you?
You've nicked it, lad.
What are you doing here?
Zounds, boy, if you can pick me out of the solent, I suppose I may pick you out of this accursed rat trap. It's a fair return for services rendered.
But we quarreled. You rode off and left me.
True, I was a bit huffed with you when we parted, but I had you in my mind for all that.
See you in a glass of rum, Captain Clark. I warrant you'll be glad to raise your little finger and wet your whistle after what you've been through.
This is more than I can fathom. What is the meaning of it?
Oh, the meaning's as clear as the glass of my binnacle, young sir. Here you are. A glass of as good a rum as ever came out of Jamaica. Your good friend Colonel Saxon, as I understand his name to be, has offered me as much as I could hope to gain by selling you in the Indies.
And a mighty hard bargain you made of it.
Oh, fair's fair, Colonel. It's a first-rate piece of goods. Think me, though my heart's in the right place if I am rough and ready. I'd not maroon a man if I could set him free. But we all have to look after ourselves, and trade is dull at the moment.
Do you mean I'm free?
Oh, free as air, Captain. There's your purchase money on the table. Go where you will, save in England. There you're still an outlaw under sentence.
How have you done this, Saxon? Aren't you afraid for yourself?
Me? I'm a free man, lad. I have the king's pardon.
Pardon? You commanded a regiment against him. God knows how many of his soldiers you killed. How could you gain a pardon?
Why, boy, it's no mystery. Cunning old birds aren't caught with chaff. When I left you, I made for a certain inn where I knew I could count on finding a friend.
Ah, Dame Hobson.
Aye, the pretty widows. There I lay for a while till I could work out a plan that was in my head.
But how could you have got your pardon?
Have patience, lad. I'm telling you as swiftly as I may. I bethought to myself of the affair of your visit to Badminton and the Duke of... No, we'll mention no names. But you follow my meaning.
Of course I do. He let me escape.
And that, my friend, was his undoing. And my passport to safety. He'd have been wise to have hanged you.
I still don't understand. Talk plainly.
Well, I sent him a message to the effect that I proposed to purchase my freedom by letting out all I knew concerning his double dealing with the rebels.
Oh, you're a cunning devil, Colonel. A man after my own heart.
The message was carried to him secretly. And his answer was that I should meet him at a certain spot by night.
Saxon, he might have killed you.
I sent my messenger instead. And he was found stiff and stark in the morning with more holes in his doublet than ever the tailor put there. On this, I sent again, raising my demands and insisting on a speedy settlement. This time he tried no tricks. He asked my conditions.
Which were?
For you, a free pardon, and money enough to land you in a foreign country. For myself, the command of a regiment. I got them both. though it was like drawing teeth from his head.
Saxon, you rob me of words.
I knew he must do it. He's a pirate court now, and the king can refuse him nothing. He daren't let me speak, or his head would have been on the block.
And he paid over money as well?
Handsomely. For you, I demanded 200 pieces, 30 of which I've paid in ransom to the captain here.
Aye, 'tis there on the table.
20 I've kept back for my disbursements. I had to pay my messenger.
And for 20 pieces he paid with his life.
He took a chance, lad. Went against him. So here in this bag, you'll find the odd 150. 15 of which you'll pay to the fisherman who promised to see you safe to Flushing.
And a mighty fine friend Colonel Saxon has proved himself to be you, Captain Clark. Turn the tables on a duke and extort money from him as well? Well, I never heard the like. Fill your glass again, Captain, and drink to your freedom.
I am greatly beholden to you, Saxon.
I enjoyed doing it, lad.
Yeah, drink that down now. It'll be cold out there on the water.
But I can't go. I cannot leave this ship.
You can't what?
He's not took it improper. He don't know what he's saying.
I know very well what I'm saying. There are nearly 200 men aboard this ship. Simple country folk who never before stirred more than a few miles from where they were born. While they were imprisoned, I've been a support to them. They've looked to me in their troubles. And as far as I could, I've befriended and consoled them. I thank you again and again for all you've done for me. But I will not leave them.
This is too much! I foresaw many difficulties in my way, but I didn't foresee this one. For God's sake, do you know what you'll be going to?
I have a very good idea.
Yes, you'll go into hell for a bunch of clodhoppers?
They're no more fitted to be landed in a strange country than children. Oh. I may be able to assist them a little.
Now listen here, Captain Clark. As to the prisoners, I'll be as good as a father to them. So help me on the word of an honest seaman. And if you care to lay out a trifle of 20 pieces, I'll see their food is such as many have never got at their own table. They shall come on deck, too, in watches, and have an hour or two in the fresh air every day. Well, I can't say fairer than that, can I?
Captain, will you permit me to have a word with Captain Clark alone?
Oh, by all means, Colonel. I hope with all my heart you can persuade him, though.
It's no use, Saxon. You can't...
Be quiet. And when you reply to me, speak low. The captain mustn't hear what we say. You need have no fear for the future of the prisoners. They are not bound for Barbados.
Not bound? Yes.
Nor will the captain have the selling of them. If he can buy his own skin out of this business, it's more than I expect. There's a man aboard this ship who'll think no more of giving him a tilt over the side than I should.
What man? I've seen none but the prisoners.
Have you ever heard of a man named Hector Marot?
Marot? I believe they told me he escaped from the dungeon at Paddington, where I was held.
The same. He was a highwayman, a criminal, if you like. But in spite of that, he was greatly disturbed at the cruelties inflicted on the country folk after the Battle of Sedgemoor. He did what he could in his own way. Soldiers were found here and there over the countryside, pistols and stabbed, and no trace left of his assailant.
Marot did that?
And more. Micah, I sought this man out and spoke with him. His horse, it seemed, had been killed by some chance shot, and as he was much attached to it, he had no heart to continue his old trade. Moreover, he was in peril of capture. I learned, too, that in his youth he'd had some training for the sea.
What then? You still tell me nothing.
Marot's purpose was now to benefit the exiles. How could he do better than by engaging aboard this ship and sailing away from England in her? There are but 30 in the crew, and below hatches, nearly 200 men. Marot has only to go down amongst them one dark night, knock off their irons, arm them with stanchions or cuttles, and the ship is theirs. The planters may dig their plantations themselves for all the help they're likely to get from these West Country men.
You swear to me he means to do this?
I give you my solemn oath. I tell you, if I were Captain Pogram, I'd rather have the devil horns, hoof and tail than that man aboard my ship. You needn't concern yourself about the prisoners, Micah. Their future is decided.
I misjudged you, Saxon.
Sometimes, perhaps, I give you cause.
It only remains for me to thank you and accept the means of safety you've placed within my reach.
Spoken like a man. Is there anything I can do for you in England?
Well, if you could send word to my parents...
It shall be done.
Say when I can return, I will.
It may be sooner than you think, lad. There's much hatred for the king and his ministers. I doubt if he'll keep his seat long on the throne of England.
So, Captain Pogram, we've settled the business. My friend is willing to go.
I thought he'd tack round. Oh, by the mess, I don't wonder he thought twice about leaving the Dorothy Fox. She's fitted up fit for Duchess, to help me. Where's your boat, Colonel?
Alongside. My friend joins me, Captain Pogram, in hoping you'll have a pleasant and profitable voyage.
Oh, highly civil of you, Captain Clark.
Also, that you'll reach Barbados in safety and dispose of your wares in a manner which will repay you for your charity and
little,
humanity.
Little doubt of that now. Now, Captain Clark, I'll take you to the rope ladder that'll take you down to your boat alongside.
I thank you, Captain.
Have all your money safe?
Yes.
Then I've another present to make you. Huh? It was brought to me by a sergeant of the Royal Horse. You must depend on it now for food, clothing, and lodging. All you need. It's that with which a brave man can always look for his living. Here, lad.
My sword! My father's sword!
You are now, boy, one of the old and honorable guild of the Soldiers of Fortune. I wish I could come with you, but I'd promised pay and position which I can't set aside. For devil of a penny did I make out of Monmouth's rebellion.
Goodbye, then, Decimus.
Farewell, Micah. May good fortune go with you.
I grasped his hand, then went on deck, and with the captain's help, descended into the fishing boat. As the sail mounted up and we shot away, I saw my friend holding to a rope with one hand and waving the other in farewell and encouragement. That lean, sinewy figure, with its long, extended arm, was the last I ever saw of Decimus Saxon. He proved right in his prophecy. 3 years later, King James was forced to flee the country, and Dutch William and his consort Mary were called to fill the throne conjointly. For there was great rejoicing in England at the restoration of the Protestant faith. As Saxon had said, my sword earned me my living during my years of exile. But one summer's evening, I landed again on the blessed shores of my native land. I made my way to my father's house. The door was open, for the air was mild and sweet, and my heart nearly burst with love as I heard his voice, for he was kneeling at his evening prayers.
For deliverance from the powers of evil, for my sustenance during the years of oppression, and for thy mercy in preserving our dear son, though he be far away from us.
No longer, Father. I've come home.
Micah. Oh, Micah, is it really you?
'Tis I, dearest mother.
Micah, dear lad, God be thanked.
Oh, let me hold you. I never thought to see this day. Joseph, it's Micah restored to
us. Hush, wife, hush. The lad will think you demented.
And so I am. I'm out of my mind with happiness.
Oh, sit down, lad, sit down. You must have so much to tell us. How has life dealt with you?
Better than with many others.
Alack, yes. So much death and suffering.
But, Micah, you're so thin. Have you been half-starved all these years?
Oh, nonsense, nonsense. The boy's all muscle and sinew. God bless my soul. Is that my sword still hanging by your side?
Your sword, Father. It's kept me alive all these years in the Low Countries.
And you must eat. And you must be so tired traveling all that way. Joseph, don't weary him. Let the boy rest. I'll be back in a moment, Micah.
Oh, you look well, Father. Not much changed. And Mother, too.
The thought of seeing you again, son, has sustained us. You won't go from us again. I don't think your mother could bear it.
I'm home for good, Father. If you'll have me.
Have you? If you knew how we prayed for this moment.
It was an ill venture I sent you on. Yet I believed it was for the best.
It would have succeeded, but for our leader.
He paid with his head for it. Poor man.
Too much fervor, too little generalship.
And the man, Saxon, who came to us.
I owe my life to him. He proved a loyal friend. But how are my other friends, Father?
All as well as you would wish them. And they'll be overjoyed to see you.
God bless them.
Micah, you must make a hearty meal. I'll not be content until you've eaten every scrap.
Mother, it's food for a regiment.
Oh, my boy. My dear boy. I'm so fearful this is a dream. I shall awake and you'll be gone again.
It's no dream, Mother. God willing, I shall stay with you now for as long as heaven grants us all.
Amen to that, Micah.
One visit I did pay, with the consent of my parents. I journeyed to Taunton to see Reuben Lockerbie, now happily married to his pretty little Ruth.
The whole business suffered, Micah. The King James, that is, imposed heavy fines for disaffection and well-nigh crippled us.
But Reuben displayed such a head for business that now it's nearly as prosperous as it was in my grandfather's time.
I was with your grandfather at Sedgemoor, Mistress Ruth. A braver man I never hoped to see. He stood firm when Monmouth, Grey, Wade and Ferguson fled the field.
Aye, and bought their lives at the price of their possessions.
It's all over and done with, Reuben. Let's try to forget it and thank God for the present peace. Does Micah know you're a father now, Reuben?
No.
Aye. We've a young Micah now. You'll see him when he comes back with his nursemaid.
And there's something more you have to show Micah, Reuben.
Eh? What?
You grow so dull. I declare, the fatter you get, the stupider.
Oh.
Your trust, of course.
Oh, yes. You come with me, Micah.
The rebellion turned out well for you, Reuben.
Yes. I never struck a blow in the battle, yet won the greatest prize. My little Ruth. Here we are. This gate leads to the paddock. I think you may find an old companion here.
Covenant! Reuben, how?
Sergeant Gredder brought him here for me to keep.
Covenant! Covenant! Oh, my brave Covenant! Reuben, how can I thank you? This makes my homecoming complete. Have you been exercising him? He seems in condition.
Oh, he won't let me on his back. No, one of my boys takes him out. Can I give you a leg up?
Oh, no, no. I can mount Covenant without aid. Oh, Covenant. Covenant.
So Covenant and I came back to Havant as happy as two good friends could be at their reunion. I took up my old trade with my father. Of Decimus Saxon, I heard once more. Sent on an expedition to Virginia, he acquitted himself with so much honor that he was granted a tract of land which he devoted to raising tobacco. But of the strange shipload of prisoners which set sail from Poole Harbor, never a word was heard of them again. But I have no doubt that Hector Marot kept his word, and none of those brave peasants ever became slaves. One last word about my old friend. When Dutch William had been 10 years upon the English throne, there was still to be seen, in the field by my father's house, a tall, strong-boned horse, whose skin was flecked with dashes of white. And it was observed that if ever the soldiers from Portsmouth should be passing, or should the clank of trumpet or the rattle of drum break upon his ear, he would arch his old neck, throw out his grey streaked tail, and raise his stiff knees in a pompous and pedantic canter. So Covenant passed the last years of his life, a veteran among horses, well fed and cared for, and much given, maybe, to telling in equine language to all the poor, silly country steeds of the wonderful passages which had befallen him when he bore one of their own village lads to the war in the West.
That was the final part of Micah Clarke by Arthur Conan Doyle, dramatized in 5 parts by Constance Cox, with Martin Reed as Micah, Patrick Troughton as Decimus Saxon, and James Bryce as Reuben Lockerbie. Judge Jeffreys was played by John Gabriel, Major Ogilvy by Gregory DePolnay, Master Tetheridge by Stephen Thorne, Captain Steele by William Hope, and Captain John by Edward Cass. Joseph Clark was played by Nicholas Courtney, Mrs. Clark by Gwen Cherrill, Ruth by Jenny Funnell, Hangman Broderick by Colin Starkey, Sergeant Gredder by Peter Aker, Captain Pogram by Robin Summers, Master Hellstrop by Peter Wickham, Jem by David Sinclair, Clerk of the Court by Brian Smith, A Guard by William Eagle, The Foreman of the Jury by Christopher Douglas, and An Old Man by David Garth. Micah Clarke was directed by David Johnston.